Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against you. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. This weekend's game, a 41-10 handling of the Volunteers from Tennessee, was like welcoming back an old friend, one we've not seen since the Duke game. Such a reunion typically inspires new memories. Tom, what are you taking away from this game?
I think this was our most complete game this year. Between all three aspects of offense, defense, and special teams. Our defense was able to get off the field on third down. You know, we started off the game, I think they had to punt five of their first six possessions, with the exception of that touchdown that, you know, came on that 60-yard run. And then we controlled the ball in the first half. We won the time of possession. We moved the ball. We just missed on a couple plays in the first half, or we could have put some more points on the board. But we made up for that in the second half.
I want to start with offense and just some of the memories that I'm taking away from this game. I thought, in terms of playing a complete game, I thought we saw some of the play calling that we've been talking about. We ran some screens and we ran some crossing routes. We seemed to execute better in the running game, and it was good to see Trent getting to the second level. Trent, I think, more so than Mark, but getting to the second level, and then finally he broke a long run. With some of the screens, you know, they were too early that I thought we executed very poorly, but we stuck with it, and I thought we had some pretty successful screen plays later in the game, especially a couple of the first downs that Marquise Mays made. We threw it, it was maybe third and long, and we threw it short, but the blocking was set up for him to run for the first down yardage. It was good to see some of that play calling woven back into the game plan.
It was, and it was good to see that we still know how to run the slant pattern. It was predominantly to Julio because of his size, but it was also good that we stretched the field. I mean, we've talked about this numerous times that, you know, you got to take a couple shots down the field even if you don't hit them. You got to loosen up the defense, and we were able to hit them tonight, but, you know, we were able to stretch the field tonight.
Yeah, I think that's especially good. And I like the play call, the first game or the first play coming out of the second half. We came out of the huddle and just threw the ball down the field, hit a Julio, a nice gain. I just thought this is a message sender. We came out of the half. Coach Saban probably peeled paint in the locker room, and we come out firing the ball down the field, a big completion. Just really sent a message just right there to start the second half of the game.
It did, and, you know, Saban was quoted after the game that said, we've got to pick up our intensity in the second half from the offensive side of the ball, and, you know, it goes back to, you know, make them quit. And I think he felt like, look, we've got their foot on their throat, but we're letting them squirm a little bit, and we need to put this team away. And I think they were able to come out and do that in the second half.
Yeah, we were especially explosive in the third quarter, and I think we've lamented some of our third quarter play. So to come out and be so explosive in that pivotal portion of the game, I thought was great. What'd you think about Julio's performance?
You know, Julio is just he's a beast. I mean, for him to come out and set the example for these kids to play with toughness, you know, Saban said, I think it was after the Ole Miss or South Carolina game, you know, back in the day, players didn't lay on the field after they got banged up and then come back in two plays later. You know, old school football. For Julio to have, you know, pins in his hand and be back out there in practice last week and then to come out and play like he did tonight, there was numerous times that you could tell he put his hand down on those big catches and, you know, put his bad hand down to plant. And you know it had to hurt, but he still got back up and kept going. That shows these young kids, you know, a good example of playing through pain.
I thought this game was a microcosm of Julio's career so far. at Alabama. The reports are that he went to Saban the week leading up to the game and said, look, I'm going to be ready to play. I'm able to play, but don't hold me out of anything in practice. I need to practice 100% to be ready. Of course, that's demonstrating some leadership and some toughness. But in terms of this game, he had some fantastic catches, a record-setting performance. He said, you know, a yardage record for University of Alabama. And so, his, you know, historical in terms of his performance and in terms of his career, he's going to go down as an all-time great. At the same time, he had some indefensible drops. And so you love him, you cheer him, you put him on your shoulder, and then he drops the ball, and you wonder, how do you drop that ball? And on top of all that, he was playing hurt. He has the hand, and then he got banged up after one of his big catches there in the third quarter, and didn't see much of him after that. It just seemed to be a microcosm of his career. This game had every element of his entire career.
That's true, and this is also the first, this is the best utilization of Julio since he's been at Alabama. Yes, he's been banged up in years past, but it seemed like Coach McElwain used Julio the best tonight that he's used him all year. Because on third and five, when they needed a first down, they isolated three wideouts to the left. They put Julio on the right and said, Julio, you're going to run this 5 yard out, and we're going to trust you to make the big catch. So to your point of him dropping some balls, sure. But there was two or three times that he made a key catch on third down to keep the, you know, chains moving forward. And also, I don't know what the deal was with Tennessee, because Tennessee was playing man-to-man coverage on him. And Saban also said after the game, we've got to make you pay. If you're going to play man-on-man, the guy wasn't even chucking Julio at the line of scrimmage on those two or three big pass plays. And so I am kind of a little curious as to how this is going to carry over when he goes against, you know, LSU's stud cornerback in 2 weeks. Are we going to see this Julio in 2 weeks or not? That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch, and fortunately we have time to prep for that. What did you think about McElroy? He seemed to take some shots.
He did, and even though they only recorded, I think, either one or two sacks for the night, he took several hits. He showed a lot of toughness in the game. I was curious if, does he just focus too intently on the play developing to be able to do certain things to just avoid taking a shot? Because some quarterbacks will backpedal right after they throw the ball, or some quarterbacks will dodge side to side after they've released the ball. And because it was like he was setting himself up for a continuation hit. And what I mean by that is that a lot of quarterbacks that maybe his release is not as quick as some other, you know, really good quarterbacks.
Right.
Because if he gets the ball away 1 second quicker, that's a roughing the passer penalty. And right, those hits stop.
Yep.
But because he's slow with his release, you know, he got to wait till that guy's open to throw the ball, he just got drilled.
Yeah, he definitely took some hits. I think there were some hits sort of in the echo of the whistle, which, you know, you certainly coach, you know, your defensive players to do. One of the, knowing that he was taking a lot of hits, and the offensive line, they certainly need to work on that, and so does McElroy. One of the play calls, probably the biggest play call that had me scratch my head, given that McElroy was taking some hits, we get a first down on the 2 yard line, and we call a quarterback sneak. And so you know that your quarterback's taking some hits, and then you get a first down. Why don't you try the running back to the edge or the running back to the corner? If you're gonna do a quarterback sneak, do that in the middle of the field on a third down, kind of, you know, going for a fourth situation. That just seemed to be a play call that you could play call around that to avoid giving your quarterback a hit. What's your thought on that?
You would think with all the horses we have at running back that we had numerous options. I agree. That was not a good call. And, you know, the other thing about, just to touch on these hits for a second, is a lot of these hits were coming from a four-man front. So the other thing I will touch on real quick is LSU's got a much better four-man front than Tennessee, and they even talked about during the game at the size disadvantage. You know, Tennessee was 260 pounds, and, you know, Alabama's was averaging 310 or whatever. You know, as good as this game was, I think three of those hard hits came from the middle linebacker for Tennessee.
Yep, LeVar.
Where he just did a delay stunt. And all three times, Vallejos was the one who had nobody to block, and that guy just found a seam. And so hopefully that is something Pendry will work on in the bye week, is a lot of those hits came right up the middle, and either the quarterback's got to see it and throw the ball away, or somebody's got to shift
it. Someone's got to pick it up. Hey, we're talking quarterback, and we saw a second quarterback that we've not seen in a couple of weeks. What did you think about A.J. McCarron?
You know, A.J. McCarron is going to be fun to watch. It'll be very interesting in the spring. He shows glimpses that makes you think it's going to be his job to lose next year. I think he's got a quicker release. Two things that are, I guess, the biggest play that I noticed on A.J. McCarron was the touchdown to Trent. Greg McElroy had just come out of the game, and so Trent's flaring out there at the goal line, and Trent stops. And that's because McElroy would have hit him right there where he was.
As opposed to where he needs to be or could be.
Yeah, and the two things that A.J. McCarron did on that one play. Number one, he backpedaled, and so he didn't get drilled to the ground like McElroy did. The guy was right in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, he put touch on the ball, buddy led Trent, where Trent was like, oh, crap.
I got to go get it. I got to go get this one.
I got to kick it in gear to go get the ball.
Right.
But had McElroy thrown that pass, the linebacker catches Trent at the 2 or 3, or at least he has to break a tackle.
Potentially.
The reason he got that touchdown was because McCarron threw it where he threw it.
Threw it where it needed to be.
And I guess one more thing that I want to touch on real quick on this to get your thoughts is on those two big pass plays to Julio, no offense to McElroy, but it goes back to maybe him holding the ball a little bit too long. I will say that on at least one of those two big pass plays, I wanted to see a touchdown there. When you're 5 yards behind the DB, when you've got him beat as badly as he did, don't you think one of those should have been he keeps running all the way to the end zone?
Yeah, I think you let her rip and you throw it out in front of the receiver. And so McCarron certainly has the opportunity to do that. I regret the fact, and here we are at this point in the season, that we've not seen more of A.J. McCarron. I would have liked, coming off the Rose Bowl last year, seeing Texas, the situation with Texas, they had to bring in their backup quarterback who had only played limited snaps. I would have liked if we didn't just file that under our hat and go into this season saying the third possession of the first half and the third possession of the second half that starts between the 20s, I don't care what the rest of the situation is, we're going to give McCarron a show. Just so over the course of the season, he has some experience so that if we do, for whatever reason, performance, injury, you name it, we have someone that's ready to step in and play. I feel less confident that we could do that right now today if we had to come out of a situation and start McCarron.
Well, and look at Texas. They lost today to Iowa State. And why? Because this young quarterback only, you know, halfway through his first season is still going through growing pains.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't want to see a lack of rotation this year cost us games next year. Why don't we flip the field and talk defense?
You know, on defense, I guess I want to first mention this was the best movement by Darius and Dante Hightower that we've seen all year.
Yes.
Darius is still, you know, not 100%, but two or three times he read the running back in the flats, and he ran out in the flats on that play and almost had an interception. Dante Hightower, because I called him out a couple weeks ago, he finished with his best game of the year. He had 1.5 tackles for loss. He put pressure on the quarterback, which caused the interception that Lester got late in the game. Dante was running better tonight. So I hope that with that major knee injury, maybe he's just starting to get a little better, and maybe 2 weeks from now we'll see a different Dante Hightower.
I am glad to see them, and last week they moved well, and this week they moved well, and we've been talking for a couple of weeks about needing them to get, you know, survive to the bye week so they can get some rest. I'm glad they seem to be getting healthy even going into the bye so they can get some more additional treatments, some more additional rest, and come out all the more prepared and healthy for the last stretch of the season.
Hey, what do you think about Tennessee had a very young offensive line? I didn't know until I was, you know, listening to it that, you know, they had two freshmen, two sophomores and a senior. Are you a little surprised that we didn't bring more pressure in the game because they were sitting there back and forth between two young quarterbacks, one being a true freshman? We brought the pressure a couple times, but we weren't getting we affected the quarterback, but we didn't affect the quarterback as much as I thought we would from such a young offensive line for Tennessee.
Yeah, you would like to think that we'd get a little more pressure on him, but to your point, we did affect the quarterback. We did hold the running game mostly in check, and I want to go a little different way on manufacturing pressure on the quarterback. Their long run came off of a blitz. We sent Lester on the outside, and we've been running a Tampa 2 with our two safeties in the middle, and we blitz Lester around, and so everyone talks about, we got to blitz the quarterback, and you and I talk about it too.
Right.
But blitzing comes at a price. You're taking a man out of a position, out of his assignment, and sending him after the quarterback. And so when we take Lester out of his role in the deep middle, I'm not saying a middle linebacker or a defensive right. lineman couldn't have gotten him, but Barron slid over, and that left the middle of the field open, and they have, you know, a lengthy run for a touchdown. So sometimes when we manufacture pressure, we have to be careful.
No, we do, and I think we saw on that play that if we're going to be in a dime and we're going to blitz a safety, I want it to be Barron, because I did see on that play that I think if Lester is in the middle of the field back there at safety, I think he tackles that guy. Maybe he tackles him at the 5 or 10 yard line, but I think he saves a touchdown. Barron was not as comfortable in space against that shifty running back. Yes, he's a ball hawk, but he doesn't have I don't think he has the same skills 30 yards off the line of scrimmage to catch a, you know.
Well, sure, I don't think he's as fast. Right. I don't think he's maybe as fast as Lester.
So that affected that play is all I'm saying. Right. If they had flipped the role there, maybe they don't score a touchdown.
Sure.
And unfortunately, that was a 60 yard run. And so you break your streak of 41 games of not letting a guy gain 100 yards, which, you know, ironically last came against Tennessee, and 60 yards of that comes on that one play. So had that kid not had that one play, he only finishes the game with 40 yards.
It was Ole Miss, wasn't it?
I thought it was Tennessee, but it might have been Ole Miss.
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the law firm.
Maybe Tennessee is where we started the new streak.
The new streak.
Maybe that is that's what I was thinking of.
The last 100-yard back was the law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
Hey, one more thing I want to mention is we should have had two picks in the first quarter. What did you think about Phelan Jones taking the place for Daquan Menzie?
You know what? I noted that too, that he got the start. And I thought he played well. I didn't think there was much of a drop-off there. I think that's more a function of Menzie being a little banged up, and he's got the Achilles, obviously, that he's recovering from, sort of a miraculous that he's
played
even
several
back
weeks
playing.
Now.
He's played several weeks in a row. I look at that more as let's give Menzie more rest, and as much as I see it is Phelan coming on. I don't think Phelan necessarily beat out Menzie.
No.
I think that he's developed enough that, hey, we can give Menzie a break because Phelan's playing a lot better.
I will say to point out a play for Phelan on Robert Lester's interception in the end zone, he saved Phelan. Because if you go back and look at the replay,
yep.
Greg Jones, I believe, is Tennessee, the senior receiver for Tennessee. He baited Phelan one way and went the other, and he was open in the end zone. And he didn't know that Robert Lester, the ball hawk, was right behind him. And so Robert Lester saved him on that play.
Speaking of players stepping in and playing when they typically haven't, I noticed that Chavis Williams started the game. Part of that was alignment. We started with a strong side linebacker in the game, and we've typically rotated that position.
We played a 3-4.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Typically our base is a nickel, and so that's the linebacker position that we rolled out. Should we at this point be surprised that Chavis Williams got that start ahead of Jarrell Harris?
Not seeing what they're doing in practice. You know, I will say that there was a play early in the game where Chavis Williams did not keep containment, and they got a big, you know, like a 8 or 10 yard play around his corner. I like the base formation because it gets Nico in there, because apparently they think C.J. Mosley brings a little more speed to that 4-2-5 alignment that they typically play in. But no, I'd rather see Jarrell in there. I even noticed late in the game, the very end of the game, he comes in for mop-up duty.
Yep.
Jarrell does. And there was a 3rd-and-1 play where he blows up the guard, and he makes the play in the backfield so they don't get a yard. And that's a big play because you held them right there.
Mm-hmm.
He showed speed and toughness, and he actually did a form tackle, which a lot of kids don't know how to do these days. And so I saw a glimpse of him at the end of the game saying, gosh, boy, I'd like to have him on the field.
There's something.
It makes you wonder what's going on.
Well, it does make you wonder. And playing the game of football is not an agility drill. Playing the game of football is not a physical fitness test. There's something that's just not there. There's something that he's not able to translate because he was a five-star athlete. He's one of the best linebackers in the country when he came out. Something's not translating to give him more minutes on the field.
You would think that he'd be able to beat out Sheamus, you know, at the outside there. So it definitely makes you wonder. I guess to the same point is, you know, we didn't see Jarrell at all until the very end. He's not even in the rotation.
Right. Right.
Sheamus had more snaps than Jarrell did.
That's my point. And I don't know at this point whether I should be surprised about that or just say, okay, that's just the reality. I need to reposition my level of expectation and move on.
No, that's true. That's true.
There was another player that we saw actually play pretty well that we've not seen much of. B.J. Scott, what did you see about his performance?
You know, I think B.J. Scott, he's another one of those scratch your head, you know, what's going on. Because just for those that don't know, he obviously, you know, he started as a true freshman on the offensive side of the ball. He redshirts as a sophomore. Part of it we hear is to learn the complexities of the defense. We've heard that he had a boot. You know, we heard he's been wearing a boot during the week for, you know, weeks now. But you're stealing my thunder a little bit here. He is, this was the most significant contribution that this kid has made to this team in an Alabama uniform.
Yes.
I think that, you know, he is really, I hope he continues to come on because it will allow that nickel and dime to be so much better.
Yeah, and I kind of set you up on that one. I wanted to talk a little bit about B.J. Scott, too. When he got that pick, it came over to the sideline. Team's always going to be excited when somebody gets a pick. It just seemed a little bit more. People coming up and patting them on the back, and they just showed up.
Tons of key players, Darius and Dante and Julio.
Exactly, like, almost a breakout. And then when he made the tackle and got the face mask, just the impression that I got is he's almost trying to make 15 tackles at once because he's trying to so demonstrate his ability and his readiness to play. There's also something funny that I saw.
I was just going to say that you hope that those key leaders,
yes,
jumping on him like that will help the light come on for him.
Yes.
Because even if he doesn't become a starter, but even if he and Phelon Jones is able to step up the competition, Dre and Daquan and DeMarcus are going to be better players.
You hope it's the carrot that he needs to motivate him, and I certainly agree. I have to say something. I did see something funny with Jarrell Harris and B.J. Scott, and late in the game when they're both in. Jarrell is up in his linebacker position, up at the line, and B.J. Scott, the corner, you know, steps up and kind of pats him on the rear end. You know, you need to move down. I'm positioning you. And Jarrell just turns around and waves him off. And in that moment, I couldn't help but wonder, which one of them is right? Because neither of them play a whole lot.
Right.
Neither of them, you know, they both are suspect in picking up the defense and picking up the schemes.
Yeah.
And so which one was right in that play? And I just got the biggest kick out of these two guys telling each other where they need to be lining up.
No, that's
that
funny.
Just, you know, that was a pot and kettle situation. In my mind.
No, that is funny.
Why don't we move to special teams, and I'm gonna call you out a little bit, or at least ask a question. Last week, Shelley was in and kicked a long field goal and missed, and we had the discussion, why didn't Cade come in and kick that? He's the longer kicker. We had Shelley kick that, more accurate kicker, so to speak. He missed a short kick this week, so... Are we seeing Cade Foster win the kicking job? Is Shelley about to lose his kicking job to Cade Foster?
No, I made a point of realizing that one of those field goals in the first half that Shelley made was a 42-yarder. And so, you know, last week we talked about why Cade has made a 45 and a 48-yarder. Why do you bring Shelley at a 42? And you said, because we want to see if he can do it. And last week you said, okay, it didn't cost
us. Maybe he couldn't. Yeah.
Maybe he's not the guy. What does Saban do on a 42-yarder in the first half? Shelley made the field goal.
Yep.
After he had missed one, he brings him in to kick the 42. So really, I have no idea where that is.
That'll be fun to see how. I don't know who that, you know, in any given situation, I don't know who's going to come in either. I guess that'll be fun to watch unfold.
One other thing about special teams that I wanted to mention was our punt return, or lack thereof, tonight. We talked about Marquise Mays and how good he did last week. There was one key moment in the game where we had Tennessee pinned back in the first half, and they punted the ball, and Marquise lets it bounce at the 35-yard line, and there's no gunners anywhere close to him. And he lets it bounce at the 35-yard line, and it rolls to about the 17. And yep. So I said, man, if Hobby would have been there and he catches it on the run at the 35 and he gets to the 45 or 50, we're setting up for a score here.
Yep.
But instead, we're starting back inside the 20.
Yep.
So I just wanted to comment on that's going to be hit and miss all year, it seems like.
It is, and he's been called into starting duty because of, you know, Julio was injured and hurt, and so hopefully that's something that comes with additional reps and additional practice. Who are you giving your mini game ball to this week?
Well, you've kind of stole my thunder on that. It's going to have to be B.J. Scott. I was torn between a couple players, but I think B.J. Scott epitomizes what Saban is after. You know, Saban wants kids that are going to – the light's going to come on at some point. And something just tells me maybe that was it for him because, you know, not only did he have the big pick, but he also had three tackles on kickoff coverage where he made the play and did the Trent Richardson impression.
Yep.
And so, you know, he has to be my guy tonight.
No, that's fair, and I think that's a good pick. You know, like you said, he had his best day in crimson or in white, as it was in this case. I'm giving my game ball to DeMarcus Milliner. There's a couple guys, you know, Phelan stepped in and played well. He, you know, he certainly is sort of a dark horse in that for the game ball, and I think he played well. But I want to call out DeMarcus Milliner. He came out very physical play right from the start of the game, and it was unfortunate that it knocked the Tennessee player out. He was going to hit him in the chest, and you know the replay,
the guy's,
you could tell,
came out from,
yeah,
under.
He was sliding down, and yep. So that lowered the target range. Sorry that he couldn't come back, and that's unfortunate. But the fact is that he stepped up and struck a player, and I think that sent a message to Tennessee, but I think that also sent a message to himself that he can come in and he can play. And he's a true freshman, and so he's growing up. You know, we've got a couple players that are doing this, growing up before our eyes. And it seemed that was a nice pivotal play for him. He came back later in the game and made a key strike on a player and took him down. And he just seemed to be playing really physical. And if we're going to continue as our base, play a lot of Tampa 2, we need physical corners. And as a true freshman, I like the runway that he has ahead of him. As we change gears from this game and looking forward, what's your big takeaway?
My takeaway has to be non-Alabama football related. My first takeaway, because I have two today, is that DBs in high school and college, they need to go watch a peewee football game, and they need to go back and learn how to form tackle. This has nothing to do with Alabama in the game, because I think Alabama's DBs actually do that pretty well, thanks to Kirby and Saban. But I happen to notice a glimpse of the Oklahoma-Missouri game, where obviously, you know, Oklahoma lost the game, but there was a key play in that game where Missouri catches a ball, or the receiver catches the ball, and two DBs just throw the shoulder into them. They fall down, and he scores a touchdown. You know, I remember back in the day when we started playing where whatever happened to finding your hips and wrapping your arms around the two hips and putting your helmet in the stomach? You know, just like you're talking about B.J. Scott on his face mask penalty, I think just too many guys are just tackling up high, and I just don't understand, you know, why. It just seems like that's a lost art when it comes to the secondary teaching them how to tackle.
Yeah, it's the highlight bump tackle and whatever that is exactly. And it's a big, you know, it's a big story in the NFL, and they're changing some of the rules. Or not really changing, but enforcing some of the rules. I think it's as simple as just bring back tackling. People are saying, oh, the NFL, they just becoming a flag football league. No, tackle with purpose, and all of these other incidental storylines and issues, they go away. Tackle with purpose. Bring your arms. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and find the hips, though. It's like the body's going to go where the legs go. And with all these powerful running backs and stuff, if you just go wrap up the legs, I just don't see it being done when I watch all these highlights and stuff. My other takeaway that I wanted to mention is, what did you think of Bob Stoops? You know, with 6 minutes left in that game, you know, they are down by 9 points. He goes for a 2-point conversion instead of kicking the extra point and making it a one score game, and really say putting the pressure on Missouri to flinch.
Yeah, I think in that situation, you have a decision, and as the head coach, it should always be your job to, when you're behind, how can I make this a one possession game, and when you're ahead, how can I most efficiently make this a two possession game? And so you want to draw closeness when you're behind, and you want to create separation when you're ahead. And so by kicking that point, it would have been an 8-point game, a one possession
ball
game.
Off. Put the pressure on them.
Exactly. And then conversely, if you're ahead, then field goal, touchdown decision. If the field goal makes it a two possession game, then that's your decision.
It just shows how every call matters. And when I heard that he had done that, it reminded me of Saban and that fake field goal in the South Carolina game, where two great, phenomenal coaches just made one bad call out of 60 calls, and look what it did to them.
That's a very good point, because we could go back, and I think we did in that podcast, but that field goal would have made it a one-possession game. And put the pressure on. We talked about sphincters clinching at that moment, and certainly that would have, you know, whatever. That game's well over. Tommy, looking ahead, we have the bye week. What's your objective for the team for the bye week?
You know, I'm hoping some young players get some reps. I'd like a Jarrell Harris in 2 weeks of practice to get back in the defensive rotation. I would like, obviously, we want these guys to get healthy and get some rehab, and you know, we want the Julios and the Dariuses and the Courtney Upshaws to get healthy, and the Dante Hightowers. But I want some of these young guys like a Jarrell Harris to get some reps, because I think we need some, you know, contribution from guys like him as we play some of these LSU-Auburn matchups down the road. We need his speed on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with a bye week, you always have to have a, good coaches kind of take this approach. You always have to have a plan. You have to have a philosophy. And I think for the bye week, you need to have the mentality that we're going to win the bye week. We don't have a game, but we're going to win the bye week. And you do that with no additional injuries, no arrests. These are college students. It happens. But your three primary objectives in a bye, and I take them in this order, is to get healthy, to self-scout and revisit fundamentals as you need to with key personnel, and prepare for your future opponents. Not just your next opponent, but your future opponents. And so we have a stretch of games here. We probably need to spend most of our time on just a couple of those, this extra time, but we need to dedicate this next week to getting healthy, getting back to fundamentals, self-scouting, not taking negative steps backwards, and preparing ourselves for the balance of the season. Very good. That's been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide. Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can ever play against you and make your ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas